Finally, in SEAL training, there's a bell. All you have to do to quit is ring the bell. Ring the bell, and you no longer have to wake up at 5 o'clock. Ring the bell, and you no longer have to do the runs, the obstacle course, the PT, and you no longer have to endure the hardships of training. If you want to change the world, don't ever, ever ring the bell.
You are listening to the Kill the Quit Podcast Hour, presented by Kill Quit Performance Drinks.
Enjoy drinking Kill Cliff after sweaty workouts, big rides, full rounds, long days, longer nights, or whenever you feel the need to get back up to full speed.
Kill Cliff, performance drinks for warriors. Ignite, endure, recover. And now, Mark Zeno.
Welcome into Kill the Quit, brought to you by Kill Cliff. I am your host, Mark Zeno. This week's guest is currently a MLB.com baseball reporter. She is also one of the creators of the website Athlete Daily, a CrossFit veteran, and a former swimmer at Michigan State. She is Britt Giroli here on Kill the Quit. Britt, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Good to talk to you again, Mark. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. And for our listeners who don't know, Britt and I go way back from my days in covering sports in Baltimore. Britt works for MLB.com and the Baltimore Orioles, covering that team. So we've known each other for quite some time. I was really excited when you reached out. You're a fan of Kill the Quit, fan of Kill Cliff. And when you reached out, I thought you'd be a perfect guest for this radio show / podcast that we do here for Kill Cliff. And it's great to talk to you again. So I'm excited to hear about your whole story. I know a little bit about you as far as our time together, but I don't know all the ins and outs. And that's what I'm excited to get to. As I mentioned before, you were a swimmer at Michigan State. Before that all happened, obviously growing up through childhood, you were an athlete and everything else. So kind of give me the beginning of, how you got involved in sports and fitness and everything else.
Sure. So my parents, long story short, my dad had Hodgkin's disease, stage 4 at 19. And they thought he was going to die. Didn't end up dying. Married my mom and they said, hey, you aren't going to have any kids. I'm a child of 4. And so my parents were pretty excited about that. And no boys, though. And so my dad was kind of really excited to turn us all into tomboys. So, growing up, we did the gamut of sports. And, we would back squat in the living room to the dining room chairs. And my mom would get so upset. She would come home and my dad would have us, squatting to pillows set up on the dining room chairs. So it was an interesting childhood. We played a lot of street hockey. We did a lot of unusual things for girls. We did taekwondo. I have a black belt in taekwondo as well. So that's something that has kind of always been with me, watching sports, playing sports, those kinds of things. And then certainly when I went to college at Michigan State, you kind of had to pick one sport. And for me, that was always swimming.
All right, so hold on, a lot to unpack there. When did you get your black belt in taekwondo? Was this during like your high school years, or was this post high school college?
This was during my high school years. One day from when I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, our school bus took the wrong route home. We got home about an hour late. My parents thought that my older sister and I had been abducted, and the next day they decided, hey, if something like that happened, we were going to be able to defend ourselves. They enrolled us in taekwondo.
Wow.
And, did that for about 10 years. Got my black belt. You had to break boards and all that other stuff. My sister, who runs Athlete Daily with me, when she was about 8, went to a tournament. She was the only girl, and she beat up all these little boys to win the trophy. It was it was great.
So, but like taekwondo as a, I think when little kids do it, it's great because it's the discipline, it's the structure, but it's also learning how to use your body physically that makes you a better athlete. How much did taekwondo help you in later on in your high school years as you went through sports and everything else?
Oh, a ton. I mean, and it also just helps you with the respect factor, the yes sir, the no sir, the discipline, the being on time, those factors as well. But yeah, I mean, you learn how to stretch, you learn how to take care of yourself kind of at a young age. And, that's something that, even now into my 30s, traveling all the time with MLB, that's something that has really been ingrained in me that, you have to have, you have to put yourself first. And it's not selfish at all, because if you don't take care of you, no one else is going to do it for you.
You mentioned your sister was the only girl at one of the tournaments. Did you find that you were the only girls in taekwondo at the time in your respective age brackets?
Yeah, pretty much. Once in a while, there'd be another girl, but yeah.
Well, that's important because as we, start to talk more and we get into your career, I mean, as a sports reporter, you are a female in a very male-dominated industry, and I want to, you know, dive into all that later on. But I guess from an early age, did you find yourself a lot being the only girl around a lot of other boys?
Yeah, and honestly, we were the only girls growing up on our street. We used to play street hockey, like I said, with a bunch of boys. It was all boys in our neighborhood. So I guess that probably helped. I'm at the point now, Mark, where I don't even realize, but I'll look around once in a while and be like, oh yeah, I'm the only female in here. I'm always the only female. I'm just kind of used to it.
Well, but I mean, did you ever notice it when you were a kid? Because sometimes kids are so unassuming and they're unaware. They just look at it as, I'm having fun, I'm playing football, I'm playing basketball, I'm playing baseball. It doesn't matter how many girls are there. They just, you know, as kids, the innocence of the whole thing never gets to them.
Right. That's a good question. And no, I didn't. And my dad was never like, oh, you guys are females. You know, we shouldn't be lifting. We shouldn't be squatting. No, we'd go to the track. We would do pull-ups. We would run. I think it kind of all started with my dad. He never treated us like, you know, you're a girl, you can't do this. It was, you're going to do the same thing that you would have done if I had sons. And, you know, that's pretty much how we grew up.
Did you ever look around at the girls, whether it was in grade school, middle school, high school, whatever it was, see all the things they were doing and go, well, how come I'm not doing that? Or I'd like to try that.
No, I did think that growing up, by the time I got to, you know, middle school, I did realize that, yeah, I was a tomboy, you know, especially in high school, you know, you do start to realize, like, you know, I'm 32. I still can't curl my hair. I feel like this is a skill I should have learned at like 10.
That's pretty
funny.
Yeah.
So I do feel like it's something that there was clearly a difference. You know, I could talk sports with people. You know, my dad would stay up late at night watching the Rangers play. And, you know, I would do my homework while, you know, the NHL was on. He was a huge Yankees fan because we're from Connecticut. And, I did realize early on that a lot of little girls, one, didn't do the things I did athletically, didn't play in those arenas, and two, just didn't have that father figure that maybe was around. My dad was around all the time. He was picking us up from school. He was around all the time. And I think that's important. I think a lot of people grow up and you know, the traditional standard was, you know, the dad was working long hours or making business trips. And, you know, in our house, my mom worked nights and my dad watched us during the day. And I think that really helped kind of set up who I was as a person. He had such a great impact on my life.
And a sad note, I don't mean to kind of just, you know, bring it down a little bit. Obviously, your dad passed away, but your dad passed away a couple of years ago. And, you know, I know that was a tough moment for you. How much of everything he taught you is still with you after all these years?
Oh, God, everything. I mean, every night when I walk to my car, from Camden Yards or whatever stadium we're in, I think to myself, God, my phone would have been blowing up because, you know, they lived on the West Coast later in life. My dad would stay up and watch the Orioles. He would have been sick every game. It would have just been him complaining about the team, the organization, the whole ride home. But yeah, there's definitely moments when I compete, you know, in CrossFit or powerlifting and, you know, really everything. My dad was always he wanted us to be the best. There was no other option than being the best. And I think that pursuit of excellence is something that you can kind of carry over to every arena of your life, really.
Certainly is. She is Britt Giroli, our guest here this week on Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff. I'm your host, Mark Zinno. One more question on Taekwondo, because, you know, as you go through high school and you start to discover other sports, and, you know, we're going to get into swimming here in a moment, Taekwondo is pretty time consuming, especially if you're doing it at a serious, legit level, like you're going to go get a black belt. So I guess two-part question. One, how did you balance that with everything else you wanted to do? And furthermore, how come it didn't consume you and take over most of your time and deter from your ability to do other sports?
Right. So this is going to sound a little crazy, I guess, but growing up, our schedule was when we got out of school, my dad would pick up my sister April and I, and we'd go and we were pitchers for softball. She played college softball at Pitt. So we would go and we would pitch for an hour, and then we would go to swimming for an hour and a half, and then we would leave swimming early. It was supposed to be a 2-hour swim practice, and we'd go to Taekwondo from 6 to 8. So, you know, it was just, I'm looking back now and I'm like, that was insane.
Yeah. You know? Like, when did you do homework? From like 10 to midnight?
Exactly. I mean, I'm looking back now and I'm like, man, no wonder I got to eat whatever I wanted. I mean, that was just insane. So I think from that perspective, I guess that helped because I'm always used to being super busy. But something like Taekwondo, And really all of those sports kind of carried over. I think if you play, anyone who plays youth sports and anyone who competes in anything at some sort of level, you kind of learn a lot about yourself. And for me, looking back on those times, it was like, you know, I can literally do everything. How far can you push your body physically and mentally? And I think anyone that swam knows how draining that is on everything. And to get out of a pool after 90 minutes and then go to Taekwondo and then get picked up from there, it really just insane. But I think people sleep on karate in general for females. And I think it's something that I wished a lot more people knew how to do. Because honestly, Mark, I always felt like in college and high school, even in Baltimore here, that I had a fighting chance if something ever happened to me. I knew how to defend myself. And I think that's something that really everybody, male or female, needs, that basic survival instinct.
You know, when you look back, you said the schedule was crazy. I know you don't have kids yet, but you know how, and especially covering a sport like baseball, you see how travel baseball and playing it year-round and everything else, the great lengths that kids go through and sometimes their parents put them through. Would you do that to your child? Do you think that's too much? Would you probably have a less stringent schedule than your dad put on you?
Yes, I think I would. But I do. The thing that I think that helped is that we didn't do anything year round. You know, I think nowadays the problem is these kids do one sport and that's all they do, as you know. And that was never the case. Like I said, we used to play street hockey in the yard. And I think it wasn't until high school that I dropped Taekwondo. And even then, it wasn't until my senior year that I dropped softball and just swam. So I probably would have my kids maybe pick two sports at once. I think three is a bit much, but I think too many parents now at 10 years old think their kid's going to go to the major leagues and they've got to play summer and they got to play fall and they got to do spring. And then they make these year-round sports and these kids are hurt, physically, mentally burnt out by the time they hit high school.
Well, with that, it was leading to my next question. We talk about being burnt out. When you look back, was your childhood fun?
Yeah, it was great.
Really? Okay.
I wouldn't take any of it back.
You never bothered to like think for a second, like, this is too much. You never complained, Dad, this is too much. Like, I just need a break. Like, I just want to go be a kid for a little bit.
No, I mean, I loved it. We used to wake up on Sunday mornings. My dad would be watching Italian soccer. We'd play soccer in the house with like a softer plush ball. So, I mean, we were just constantly doing stuff. And I guess as a kid, that's how you grow up and you don't know any different. And
sure.
I wouldn't trade it for the world. That's literally all we were doing. We didn't have Nintendo. We didn't have any video games. We didn't have any of that. All we did was play, whether it was an organized sport or something in the neighborhood or like I said, something in our house.
Amazing, amazing stuff. All right, let's get to the specific stuff with swimming because that propels you to your next level. When you're going through Taekwondo and doing everything else, when do you discover swimming or is that something Dad said, hey, I want you guys to learn?
No, so growing up, we grew up next door to my dad's parents, my grandparents, and they had an outdoor pool. So we swam from a very early age. You know, I was the annoying kid that was like, hey, how long can I hold my breath? You know, I used to drive my parents crazy, like, time me, watch this. So I think when I was 8, when I got about old enough to get on a swim team, I got on a swim team. And from there, you know, I realized kind of by the time I got to high school, that I was much better at swimming than I was at softball. Swimming was going to be the thing that carried me through. But it was going to be distance swimming for me. And I guess this is really the story of my whole life. I'm not fast. I'm not particularly flashy, but I could kind of outwork people. So by the time you got to the end of a long swimming race, I was still going that same pace that I was in the beginning.
All right. So we talk about like the mental struggle though, the mental versus the physical a lot here on Kill the Quit. As you're going through softball, taekwondo, swimming, everything else, which one was the most physically challenging for you and which one did you enjoy the most?
Swimming. Swimming was the most physically challenging because you can't talk to anybody, obviously. You're in your own head the entire time, and there's really nobody stopping you. You really have to channel that mental focus. You have to kind of keep yourself motivated because it's mundane, right? You're just swimming laps and laps. You can't talk to anybody. It's the same stuff over and over and over again, even more so when you get to college and it becomes, you know, your entire life. But swimming to me was just so, so rewarding, but so physically draining.
Mentally, was it the toughest for you or was it something that you did really well? But just as you talk about a little bit more of like the physical stuff being leading to the mental challenges, I should say.
Yeah, mentally, I think it was the toughest as well. Now, Taekwondo was very mentally challenging, but it was something that you had other people there. You could kind of talk or joke around with people between things, before class or after class. Swimming is just so isolating. I don't think people realize how isolating it is. And also you're using every single muscle in your body every second. So for me, swimming was that big challenge. And you know, I always joke around, I wish I was better at softball because it would have been way easier to stand on the mound than it would have been to swim for 3 hours.
Did you ever have those conversations with your sister who said she chose softball? Was she better at softball than everything else clearly, or was that just something she liked more?
Yes, she was much better. It's interesting. We're built totally different, got very different strengths and weaknesses. She's more speed, power. She's much better, and she's a nationally ranked power lifter, so it kind of makes sense. She is much more suited for that stuff. She's a much better pitcher than I ever was. She went to a different high school specifically because their softball program was better. Because again, my parents are crazy.
Well, I mean, were you guys close growing up because you did so many things together, or did you not ever really have time to you know, cultivate a relationship with her?
Oh, we're incredibly close. You know, we used to. I mean, I have three sisters, but really April and I, you know, the two that started the website together, we, you know, would make up our own languages together. She very early on was about my height. We're 2.5 years apart, but she kind of grew much quicker than I ever did. So we were very similar in stature, it seemed like. So we kind of grew up together almost.
All right. We'll take a time out. When we come back, Britt's journey through high school and into Division I swimming at Michigan State. Don't go anywhere. This is Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Kill the Quit podcast hour, presented by Killcliff Performance Drinks.
Killcliff, performance drinks for warriors to get you up, get you through, and get you back to full speed.
And now, back to the show with host Mark Sinnoh.
Welcome back to Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff. I'm your host, Mark Zeno. This week's guest is Britt Giroli, former Division I swimmer at Michigan State, current reporter for the Baltimore Orioles, MLB.com, and also creator of the website Athlete Daily. Going to get to all that coming up. But let's get right back towards high school and you getting into swimming, realizing that was where your strength was, your forte. How quickly did you realize that swimming would be something that you could do competitively at a collegiate level?
I would say probably by my sophomore year. We had a really, really good swim program in my high school in Connecticut. They were state champions pretty much every year. It was a really, really good program. And the swim club I had been doing since I was 8 was kind of that feeder program into it. So I kind of realized early on, hey, this might be able to help me pay for college. This might be something I can pursue past high school.
All right. So what was the schedule like? Because you told me your schedule pre-high school was pretty maniacal. So I can only imagine what the swimming schedule was like for you in high school while you were getting ready to prepare for collegiate swimming.
Yeah. So in high school, a lot of high school programs, I think nowadays, do the two-a-days. But we were really lucky in that we did not do that. I had one practice after school for about 2.5 hours. And depending on the point of year it was, I would either go pitching, like do softball or something afterwards, or I would just go home. So honestly, compared to my childhood, it seems like it's a lot better.
Right.
And again, I was still lifting weights with my dad in our living room with the dining room chairs. We were still doing all of that extra stuff on the side. But by then, by the time we got into swim season, I really couldn't do taekwondo and softball and swimming at the same time, especially because we had swim meets and things like that. So it really became just that 6 days a week, 2.5 hours in the pool for the most part.
Now, you mentioned you were distance. How did you figure out that was your best event? And what event was it?
I was good at nothing else.
Well put.
To quote Liam Neeson, I have a very specific set of skills.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, I mean, literally, if you watched my swim meets off that starting block, I'd be consistently the last person in. I was terrible off the blocks. Again, I just was able to outlast people. That pace that I could hold, and it's the same thing now. It was the same thing when I ran marathons after I graduated college, was I could hold a pace. That was all I could ever do. I can't sprint for the life of me. So early on in high school, it was, okay, what's the longest event we can put her in? That's the 500 freestyle. And the next one is the 200. Those are the two I did in high school. And then in college, it became, oh my God, she's too slow for these. We can put her in even longer events and she'll be better.
Well, I mean, was that, did you recognize that you were able to do that early on, or is that something that you, your coaches just say, well, let's just see how far she can swim before she starts to, like, you know, sink?
Yeah. I recognized it early on because I don't have a whole lot of natural talent in anything, I feel like. You know, April, my sister, is much more naturally athletically gifted. My older sister even as well, much more athletically talented, but kind of what I did have and where swimming really comes into play, like I talked about, is that mental toughness. And I simply decided that whatever pace I was going out in that first lap, I was going to hold. And, you know, I kind of held myself to that standard. So I was always able to do that. And it's interesting because in high school, you know, we would have goal setting and we'd visualize these races and stuff. And I was always, my coach would always sit down with me and he'd be like, okay, well, we know you can hold that pace. I want you to go faster in the second half of the race. And, you know, which is ludicrous. Nobody does that. But it's something I became known for. And it's a way I was able to win races, is when everyone else was kind of giving into that fatigue and that tiredness and kind of okay, just finishing it out. That's when I kind of kicked it into another gear.
That's interesting. You talk about the mentally grueling stuff. Were you able to realize while you were swimming through these races that, you know, you were getting stronger as it was going along?
Yeah, I think, again, the I don't know what we would call my childhood, but, you know, training for 6 hours a day as a child probably helped. I think it was kind of that message my dad ingrained in us, you know, that, you know, you could outwork everyone. You can't control who's better than you, but you can outwork people. And you know, nothing was good enough in our household unless you gave your absolute best. It had to be 100%. You know, nothing irritated my dad more than laziness. I had a cousin growing up who lived, you know, in our neighborhood, fantastic talent, went to Notre Dame on a full scholarship, super lazy, blew out his knee, never rehabbed, and that was it. You know, now he's a janitor. So, and again, there's nothing wrong with that profession, but he had the talent and the skills to go to the pros, and he never did that. And my dad kind of watched, you know, he was older than all of my sisters and I. My dad kind of watched his sister, my aunt, go through this whole thing. And I think he kind of realized and thought to himself, my kids are going to be, you know, many things, but they are not going to be lazy. They're going to reach their full talent. And that's something that resonated with me early on.
So when do you start to get offers for collegiate swimming? And what was that feeling like?
So my senior year, was when you kind of started looking at things a little bit. Junior year, we won the states. I was all state. I became all American. And
oh, wow.
you're kind of looking at things and kind of going through. And I was like, oh, I think I want to swim in college, you know? And so my parents were, you know, they're excited. And so we were going, my older sister didn't go to college. She enlisted in the military. And so we were going through colleges. I visited maybe 10 schools, hated them all. I came home from one of them, I remember, and I told my parents, yeah, I don't think college is for me. And they were like, what? No, you're going. So the last school I visited was Michigan State that summer. So it was really late that I decided that I was going to go to Michigan State that fall. But I just got a real good vibe from them. So it wasn't so much like other sports where they scout and they recruit. In swimming, it's all about times. You just send them your times. You know, it's very easy to verify those times at swim meets online. And you kind of go from there.
So what was it about the other colleges you didn't like?
There was just a lot of small schools, a lot of schools that are kind of in cities. And I just didn't really like, I'm from a small town in Connecticut. I just didn't like the vibe at any of these schools. I remember I got snowed in at a school in upstate New York and I had to stay an extra day. And I was like in tears. I was like, I cannot stay here another day. This place is terrible. So I'm really, really glad that I took that last trip to Michigan State. We actually got a phone call from Jim Lutz, who used to, he's not the coach there anymore, but wanted me to come. I remember flying into Lansing and you could see the stadium, you could see all the athletic stuff. And I was like, this is so cool. And that's really what drew me to it, was how important the athletics were and how big of a deal it was to be in the Big Ten Conference. And, you know, I was not a fast enough swimmer to really make an impact in the Big Ten Conference, one of the best swimming conferences in the country. I could have gotten records and full rides at other Division I programs, but I just didn't like any other school.
That's interesting. A lot of people would have taken the full ride. A lot of people would have taken the opportunity to be a big fish in a small pond. And it sounds like you elected for the opposite, to be a small fish in a big pond.
Yes. again, I was fighting for everything. I was fighting to get put in meets. So it was an interesting dynamic because, you know, I was captain of the swim team for 2 years. We were a really good swim program. And I chose to go to a place where I knew I wouldn't be the best. I wouldn't be close to the best. I'd really have to fight and work and scratch and claw. And I, you know, talking to you now, I kind of realized, I guess that's just my personality.
Yeah. I was going to say, was that like a motivating factor? Like, is that something that, you know, not having the easy road made it more appealing?
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I've thought about until this very second, but yeah, I mean, I guess I enjoy doing what other people tell me I can't do. And that's kind of carried over into what I do for a living.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
I've kind of enjoyed that my whole time through doing stuff that people are like, oh, you can't do that, or you shouldn't be doing that. You know, whether it's kicking little boys' asses in Taekwondo as a small child, or it's just carried over.
She is Britt Tiroli, our guest this week on Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff. I'm your host, Mark Zinno. Continuing with swimming, real quick, you mentioned the Taekwondo thing. You said you got your black belt in high school. What kind of a moment was that for you? I mean, you're moving on to college, but you're going there with a black belt. Not a lot of kids do that.
Yeah, that was super cool. I ended up skipping a belt at one point in time, from like blue to red instead of red stripe, and that kind of accelerated it a little bit. But it was cool. I mean, it was a serious thing. My parents had to come. Sometimes I wonder if my mom was like, what happened to my children? You know, her four daughters. And she's like, okay, I'm going to go watch my daughter break some wooden boards so that she can get a black belt, you know? but that's exactly what happened. You know, we had to go to the lumber yard and pick out the wood. It had to be a certain dimension. I remember like it was yesterday. And, you know, you had to break a certain amount with your feet, a certain amount with your hands. It was cool. It's something that, you know, no one could take away from me. And as weird as it sounds, I always wanted to use it. Like, I always wanted someone to attack me growing up. So as, you know, small blonde girl, they think you're kind of unassuming, and then, you know, you get them, but it never happened.
Well, thankfully it didn't, Britt.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
Well, just out of curiosity, could you still break a board today?
I don't know. I hope so. It's funny because my Latin teacher in high school, my senior year, heard about it and was like, if you break, and you know, he had a wooden podium, the podium top part came out, and he's like, hey, if you break this, it was Latin honors. He's like, if you break this, you don't have to come. You'll get an A for the rest of the year. And so I did.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's fantastic. He held up his end of the bargain too?
He did. So I don't know much. I still had to physically go to class because in high school you got into trouble, but
right.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot of Latin. You know.
That is fantastic. Did you tell your parents that?
I did, and they were really proud.
That's awesome. You'll never speak Latin again, but you know, at least you got an A in the course. All right.
Exactly.
Let's get back to college. So you get on campus, Michigan State. You start swimming there. Is there like a moment of awakening where you realize that, oh my God, like, you know, this is a lot tougher than I ever would have thought?
Yeah. Like the first day I'm like, holy shit, who are these girls? You know, these are girls from Georgia and California and, you know, heavily recruited, like Cincinnati, which is very well known for their swimming. This is, you know, places that I've never been. And also these kids have been swimming doubles since they were 6 years old. These kids have just been churning out swimming. That's all they've done. So I remember the first day, you know, we had a morning session and a night session, which again, I never did in high school. And I'm like, man, I'm exhausted. And the other girls are like, oh, we're just easing in. This is like summer workouts. So I'm like, oh, you know, like it's just, it was, then you add on weight room time, which, you know, I was a little prepared for, but there's dry land and there was so much that went into swimming, and all of a sudden the pool's twice the size. You're swimming in a 50 meter pool instead of a 25 yard pool in high school. So there was a lot of transitions, and I used to fall asleep in class all the time. I mean, I was exhausted. I had fractured ribs from all the muscle coming in on my body. I mean, I was so overworked. Yeah, it was exhausting thinking about those days.
You know what I would have told the girls? I would have been like, here, hold this board. Watch this. That's the way I would have impressed them. And as far as sleeping in class, would have done the same thing. If I break that podium, can I get out of this class?
Exactly.
Might have been a worthwhile attempt. So any thoughts of quitting? Any thoughts of like, I made a bad decision?
Well, I loved the school. I loved the school. I loved the program. And actually, 3 months in, the guy who recruited me, the head coach, Jim Lutz, got sick and left. And that was it. So there were some thoughts about, hey, what am I doing here? Is this something I should continue to do? But I'm not a quitter. I've never been a quitter. I've always been someone who's kind of thrived on that underdog role. So to me, it was important. And I knew I was going to outwork these girls. A lot of them were so much faster than I was, so much more talented. A lot of them were so much taller than I was. That's the thing with swimming, is the wingspan. You know, you look at a guy like Michael Phelps, he could take five strokes and he's at the end of the pool. You know, I'm 5'4" with very proportional dimensions. So girls that have 5-6 inches on you, you know, you really got to outwork them. You got to be better at technique. I spent a ton of time going over video, you know, but I was always that kind of person that was last in my lane. And it was a big deal to me when I was faster than somebody else in college on our team. It was a very big deal when I beat somebody in a race. It was a big deal when I was penciled in to not just travel to the meet, but to compete. And so, you know, for me, getting to go to the Big Ten championships, these were important things. And these were things that certainly weren't handed to me.
Ever think of calling your dad and telling him what you were feeling?
No, because that's just not, again, in our house, it was, well, why are you quitting? Is there something wrong, or are you just not trying hard enough? You know, so they knew I was swimming all the time. I mean, I didn't come home for Christmas break that year. We had to go on a training trip to Florida for New Year's and Christmas. You know, they knew the lifestyle, but, you know, they were also made me very aware that I could have chosen a Division I program that wasn't so intense. I could have gone to a D2 school. I could have gone to a small D1 school and had a life. I chose this and I really liked the school. And so that kind of made it better.
Through all this, we haven't talked about nutrition or anything like that. You mentioned that you ate whatever you want as a kid, but nutrition is so vital to being a successful athlete. Did you learn any of that in college, or was it just kind of the collegiate diet of pizza and whatever else was available?
Yeah, see, I'm glad you brought that up, because what's interesting is I wish I knew then what I know now about nutrition and about, you know, and about fueling myself. And also just the stereotypes. In high school, the girls swimming was a different, it was fall, the boys swimming. In college, it's all together. It's one team, right? And so you're swimming with the males. And I remember distinctly going on a training trip, and after a like 2.5 hour, like, crazy practice, Mark, they hand the guys protein shakes and protein bars. You know, they're like, you guys, you need to fuel up immediately. And the women, they were like, oh no, you ladies need to stay lean and trim. And that kind of stuck with me. And it was like, they pulled girls aside, not me, but you know, other girls, my roommate, other girls aside, and said, hey, you need to lose weight. You need to be thinner. So it's a really a messed up perception kind of the sport and the differences there. I'll never forget kind of getting on the bus and being like, seriously, we don't get anything to eat after that practice, you know? I mean, I never had a weight issue, but there were a lot of girls on my team who had, you know, clear, now that I look back, clear issues with food. You know, there were girls who couldn't sleep, and there was one girl who would wake up in the middle of the night so hungry and she'd binge eat peanut butter. And then she'd throw up because she felt bad about it. And, you know, these are things that when you're in college, you just kind of shrug. But then you look back on it and you're like, that was so messed up. There was a real opportunity to teach us how to fuel and how to take care of your body. And instead, I feel like we weren't really taught that, but the guys were. So it was really unfortunate.
So how did you get through it all, though? I mean, did you not eat when your coaches told you not to eat?
Yeah, I mean, well, I couldn't do anything about not having that, you know, anything to eat after a practice. But I was lucky in that I wasn't told, hey, you have to lose weight. I was always pretty lean in general. So, you know, I would just eat whatever. But, like, I would eat crap, you know, stuff in the dorms and, you know, just carbs on carbs and just, like, not really knowing what I should be doing or what I should be eating. But certainly when you're wearing a bathing suit and they're telling people, hey, you need to lose weight, you become a little more aware of things.
Sure, yeah.
And I remember specifically one example. There's a ice cream place in Jackson, Michigan, which is like 20 minutes away. We had some buddies then, some guys lived in our dorm. We wanted to go take the ice cream scoop challenge, right? It was 50 scoops, and they wanted to see if you could eat it all. me, two guys, and my roommate was one of the girls they told to lose weight, ended up going, and we ate it all. And we told our coach the next day, and you would have thought we told them we took performance-enhancing drugs. You know, they were just floored. You know what I mean? And my roommate, who was, you know, highly touted Cincinnati swimmer, they couldn't believe it. They were like, we're ordering you this size suit. If you don't fit into it, that's your own problem. So it was really Now that I look back on it, it was really messed up the way that they kind of taught you about fueling. And I know so much better now.
Any resentment towards those coaches for the way they treated you?
Yeah, I mean, certainly some of them. My coach, the distance swimming coach, I really, really enjoyed. But certainly the sprint coach and the head coach who took over after Jim, after the guy who recruited me left. Certainly, I think looking back, you know, there was better ways to do this than the ways that it was done.
She is Britt Giroli, our guest this week on Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff. When we come back, we'll finish up her collegiate swimming career and on to Major League Baseball. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You are listening to the Kill the Quit Podcast Hour, presented by Killcliff Performance Drinks, proud partner of the Navy SEAL Foundation.
Welcome back to Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff. It is Mark Zeno. I am your host. This week's guest is Britt Giroli, former collegiate swimmer, reporter and host for MLB.com for the Baltimore Orioles, and creator of the website Athlete Daily and CrossFitter. And when we last left off, Britt was swimming in college. So as you go through your collegiate career, I mean, you have to ask, with a sport like swimming, like, any thought of Olympics? Were any of your teammates being considered for something like that? I mean, does that ever even enter your mind?
I was definitely not good enough, but there were people in our conference, there were people on our team who were close to, again, it comes down to times in swimming, to those qualifier times. So certainly I didn't have any thoughts of that, which is kind of why I got into sports journalism, because I knew early on no one was going to pay me to swim. I was going to have to graduate and get a real job. And so that's exactly what I did. But yeah, we swam against Michigan, which is where Michael Phelps trained. And, you know, that Big Ten Conference, as I mentioned, is just a fantastically talented swimming division in general. So you would see people at the Big Ten Championships who, you know, were going to the Olympic trials. And that part's pretty cool. I mean, one of the guys I swam with was from South Africa. We had a bunch of people from other countries, you know, that they recruited. And so I know he ended up going to the trials for South Africa there as well. So, again, I was not even in that same sphere of talent.
Did that ever bother you? Was that ever anything was like, you know what, if I worked hard enough, I could do this, or no?
No, because I feel like I squeezed every last ounce of talent I had out of myself. And, you know, when you look at these Olympic swimmers, and I used to, you know, tape the Olympics, Mark, and watch and rewatch some of these races and these interviews. You know, Amy Van Dyken was like my favorite one, because she was kind of an underdog. And you go through it and you're like, could I get better? Could I ever reach that level? And to reach the Olympics in anything, I think, you know, you can work really, really hard, but you also have to be superiorly talented. And I just did not have that talent.
All right. So you mentioned that you had, you know, chosen sports broadcasting, sports journalism as a way to go. Did you discover that early on in school that that's what you wanted to do? Or is that something you picked, you know, halfway through, or what?
Yeah, I knew early on I wanted to do journalism. I used to write little stories. As a kid, I would write stories, like, you know, full-on short little novels, and I'd always be reading. So I knew I wanted to do journalism. I'm terrible at math and science. Again, like swimming, I had one thing that I was good at, holding a pace. Well, there was only one thing I was good at, and that was, like, writing. So I knew that was probably going to be the best track for me. And personally, just being a sports nut, you know, I would love to go to the bars, as you know, Mark, and, you know, what we like to do for a living. You like to argue about sports with people.
Yep.
So for me, there was no better journalistic path than sports. And to be able to sit there and write about sports for a living, to me, was probably the coolest thing you could do.
How did your collegiate swimming career come to an end? And was it bittersweet? Was it a good moment? How do you reflect back on it?
I feel as if it's something that kind of taught me a lot of really good lessons. You know, it's something that I look back on, and I met some of my best friends. I mean, I still go on vacation with those girls once a year. And, you know, you look back and you look at the relationships, and then you also look at the way your college experience was compared to so many other people. I mean, I remember staying up there for summers to swim, working at like a bar and working till 2 a.m., waking up at 6 a.m. to get in the pool. So you look back on it, and people always say, do you feel like you missed out on the college experience? And no, not really. I took an extra semester anyway to do that. But, you know, I wouldn't change going to Michigan State, swimming. I wouldn't change any part of that at all. It made me who I am.
crazy to think that, you know, you look back all these years ago, and the foundation which you built there was so important. And when people ask you, would you change anything about it? It's almost like you're not who you are today. You don't get to be an MLB.com reporter without everything you learned at Michigan State.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't, exactly. I mean, Michigan State had a really good sports journalism program, so I really lucked out there. My journalism professor, her husband, Dan Dickerson, is the voice of the Tigers.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Yeah, so that was really the only reason MLB came to Michigan State to kind of look for interns. So it's so funny when you think of it, right? Everybody can kind of go through their life, and there's such random acts of chance that you can go through that really shape who you are. Because had I not hated all those other schools, I wouldn't have even gone to Michigan State.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
You know, then you don't meet Dan Dickerson, and you don't get that MLB.com internship. And there's so much luck involved and so much just random chance.
No, especially in our industry, in the media, there's a lot of networking that goes on. So you mentioned that's how it happened. You met Dan Dickerson, and you told him what you were interested in doing. Give me that story.
Yeah, I told him what I was interested in doing, and his wife kind of, you know, MLB.com had some interns come out of Michigan State before, so they come and they interview a lot. So I was applying my senior year to some jobs as well and some internships. And I remember getting that phone call that I got the internship. It was really late. I had already gotten two job offers, and every single person I talked to said, you have to take the job. You can't not take a guaranteed full-time job over an internship that, you know, is going to end. And I thought about it for a long time, and the opportunity to cover MLB, even though it was an internship that was going to end with no guarantees, you know, I took that gamble, and I did, well, I guess once again, what everyone said I couldn't do.
Yeah.
And I took that, and those two papers that I turned down, they've since folded. So again, it comes down to random chance and happenstance.
What did you tell your dad when you wanted to take the internship over the job? Because he seems like he's a very, pragmatic fellow.
He is. Well, he actually was okay with that because it was Major League Baseball and it was sports.
Yeah.
And
okay.
It was
the Trump card.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It was the opportunity to cover a professional sports team. So never mind that it was also the worst team in baseball. It was the Tampa Bay Rays. That was it. That was the internship, and they had been horrible every year.
Wait, you had to move to Tampa on an internship?
Yep. Yes. I moved to Tampa on an internship. I got $500 a week. So that was fun. And that was an experience. But so I actually was really fortunate because the Rays, spring training, it was their final year in St. Petersburg. And because I took an extra semester, I graduated in December. I asked MLB if I could go to spring training. They said, yeah, whatever, sure. So I started in spring training with Tampa Bay that year. My dad bought the extra innings package. He was watching all the games. And the Rays kept winning, Mark. They were like 20, like they led the Grapefruit League in wins that year. And I kept saying to my dad, I think this team's going to be pretty good. And he's like, I don't know. Like they're terrible. They're the Rays. Well, that was the year the Rays went to the World Series.
Yep.
So again, random luck.
So, but how did you survive like week to week for only $500? Did your parents help you out or what?
I have my dad's sister lives in the area, so I was able to stay in an extra room with her, which was huge. And then, you know, you're not making any money at that point in time. So that kind of got me by. It was about a 45-minute drive to the stadium one way and then 45 home. So that's what I did. That's what I did every day from February until the end of October.
She's Britt Giroli, our guest this week on Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff. So do you realize at this point in time that you're this 21, 22-year-old female surrounded by all these old men in this industry, and it is an uphill climb?
Yes, it was terrifying.
How did you come to that realization?
Well, I remember the first day going there and kind of looking around, and I was like, holy hell, like, there's just a bunch of, like you mentioned, old males and me, and no one's all that friendly. And, you know, that's the thing about our business. Everyone competes with each other, all these news outlets, you know, no one really wants to help you. So it's terrifying. And you kind of look around, and let me tell you, I did my homework on the race. I mean, I wanted to make sure that I was more prepared than anyone else, because unfortunately, if a guy messes up, they mess up. If a young female messes up, it's because she doesn't know anything about baseball.
Yep,
that's kind of
that's
what
a double standard.
Into.
Yeah, that's right. It's a double standard, but it is what it is.
Yes. And everyone always assumes you're there because you're a female, you know, kind of that affirmative action type of thing. Well,
right.
They must have picked you for this internship because they picked 29 other males and they needed a female.
Did you think was the case?
I know. In fact, when I did interview with MLB.com, I got an email from the recruiter, the MLB.com guy, and he actually said to me, "You were the most impressive interview I had, but I don't think you should take this internship. I think you should take a job." He told me to not take the internship. He knew I had other jobs.
Really?
Yes.
What was that feeling like?
Yeah, so that was just like another person saying, "Hey, I think you should do this," when I wanted to do something else.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, you know, it was being a female, even my first couple of years on the Orioles beat, you're just constantly aware, you know, should I wear this shirt? Is this too suggestive? You know, is that guy that I'm friendly to going to think I'm hitting on him? And that happened all the time, you know, that happened all the time. And we can certainly get into that, but it was an interesting few years. But my internship year, they were my age. You know, all those players were my age.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe even a little older. And that's what made it, you know, unusual, is you kind of had to fight for power and respect among a bunch of guys who really didn't want to give you any power or respect. They wanted to treat you like a, you know, like a female. They wanted to treat you like a pal or like a girlfriend, or, you know what I mean? They wanted to treat you different than everybody else. And you kind of had to constantly fight that.
Well, there's two battles you're fighting, all right? It's the one against your male peers and colleagues, and the other one is against the male athletes that you're covering, because they're both looking at you kind of with the side eye, you know, as if to say, what are you really doing here kind of deal. So there's both of those things going on at the same time. When your internship ends, what's next? Like, do you get an offer for a job?
So get this. So when my internship ends, they go to the World Series. I'm all excited. They said they're going to keep three interns on. I'm like, oh, great. Well, I was not one of the three.
Oh,
I was
disappointed.
So once again, not one of the three interns. So I did what everyone does. I moved home, unhappy, miserable, to live with my parents after college. And from there, I started emailing everybody I had met at this, you know, the postseason, the Rays, you know, they go to all the playoff rounds. I got to meet people from ESPN and USA Today and Baseball America. I started emailing all these people and offering to help write stories. You know, I was an hour and a half from New York City, which not a great drive from Connecticut. Probably cost like $50 in tolls just to get there.
Yeah, welcome to New York.
But I was like, well, I can do the Mets or the Yankees. I can fill in. I can freelance. Just trying to stay involved. And MLB, their Mets reporter, Marty Noble, at the time, had a health issue, and they needed someone to freelance. So they started using me as a freelancer, as did some of these other outlets. I wrote a cover story for USA Today. I wrote a cover story for Baseball America. I wrote a story for ESPN, the magazine. And this is at 22, just from my couch, trying to make things happen. And MLB kind of kept me in that mix in 09. And they were like, well, since you're helping out, that was the year the Yankees went to the World Series, you know? So they were like, well, since you're helping out on Mets and Yankees, do you want to help us with the playoffs? You know, I'm making $100 a game, Mark. It costs $50 to park. It takes an hour and a half one way to get there, you know? So I'm like a pig in shit, you know? I'm so happy. I'm like, I'll do anything. So I'm leaving my parents' house at like noon for these playoff games. I'm coming home at like 4 a.m. I've pretty much broke even, we can all establish, on, you know, the tolls and the gas and everything. And I just did that the entire postseason for the Yankees.
And so how do you end up with a job?
So, yeah, right. So, but again, none of that's guaranteed. So, you know, I'm applying, I'm doing all this other stuff. In the meantime, I get offered a job with NESN, with the, you know, the Red Sox network. They want to do a little writing, do a little on-air stuff. I had never done any on-air stuff, but they were okay with that. So I go into MLB, and, you know, I take the train, and I'm ready to tell my bosses, like, you know, thank you for the opportunity, but I need to, you know, I need to take a real job now. I can't live at home anymore. My parents are driving me crazy. And I get in there, and they're like, well, we don't want you to leave. We'll get you a job. We'll get you a team. And I'm like, oh, great. That sounds great. They're like, well, we don't know yet which one, though. You gotta wait. So I'm waiting December, January, February. I'm starting to get nervous. I had already turned down this other job. And jobs are hard to come by, as you know, in the business. And it's February. It's a week before they go to spring training. And they take the Orioles guy and they move him back to New York. They essentially demote him back to like the desk in New York. They call me, they say, hey, you're on the Orioles. We need you to go down to spring training next week. And that's it.
Wow.
That's how I know.
And you've been there ever since, huh? And what year was this?
2010.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when you came on the beat. I remember when you showed up. I wasn't scared of you, Britt. I didn't. I wasn't intimidated by you. But no, I remember when you get there. You know, it's just it was always nice to see a new face. I wasn't one of those people. I think you know that. Like as a radio, we weren't really in direct competition anyway. I was radio, and you were print. But you know, for what it's worth, you know, it's been a pleasure to watch you grow over the years and all the things you've accomplished. Now you're doing TV as well, and you know, MLB Network and all the other stuff. I mean, you've blossomed into a full-blown media professional, and to go through all that and overcome it all certainly is a testament to not only to the hard work that you've put in, but just to your character and everything you've been able to accomplish.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. No, you were always super helpful for everyone listening. Mark was not one of the males who tried to make my path harder. He always did a real nice job. And I always enjoyed talking about, you know, the gym and bicep curls with you.
Yeah, well, that's where I wanted to go next, actually, because, yeah, I'm a little bit of a meathead. But so through all this, you discover CrossFit, right? And so how does that come into your life, and when does it come into your life?
Yeah, so after college, I had all that muscle I was talking about from swimming and stuff. And I you know, you're a female. You're like, I don't want to be big and bulky. So I ran marathons. I did 2 marathons, ran all the muscle off. And then I found CrossFit because it was kind of like the new hot thing in 2012. And I walked into a gym and never looked back. I mean, I was just immediately addicted to the competition, to the, you know, the team atmosphere, the camaraderie, and the ability to continue to push yourself. And I think for a lot of people, once you graduate high school or college or stop playing competitive sports, you don't have that outlet. And to me, that all became channeled into CrossFit, and it became something that I could do and something I could get better at and something that I found I was already stronger at than a lot of people.
Well, and so you get into this CrossFit lifestyle, which obviously is incredibly addictive, as we know here on Kill the Quit. But you start Athlete Daily with your sister, April. As you mentioned, she enlisted in the Army. She was actually Soldier of the Year in 2012 at Fort Gordon, Georgia. She's a professional power lifter now. So you guys kind of, you know, reunited, so to speak, and did this together, right?
Yeah, so I remember I was at spring training with the Orioles, you know, talking to her in a stairwell waiting for a game to start about two years ago. And I'm like, she's like, you know, there's such shitty articles online. I can't find any like stuff to help me. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I'm like, also, you know, we're starting to get into CrossFit and watch these athletes. And I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if I could go somewhere and find out about Captain David's daughter or Rich Froning? I could just like read stories about who they are as athletes. Because again, I'm a fan. And I'm a writer. I'm a journalist. I like reading good writing. And she's like, yeah, we should just start our own site. I'm like, yeah. So that's exactly what we did. And we thought it would just be for us, you know, just be a cool place we could, you know, interview some people and learn some stuff. And it took off really quickly. That story we wrote about Catherine David's daughter, she promoted everywhere. I had some contacts because I was already doing some media for CrossFit at that time. Because again, I really liked CrossFit and I wanted some better writing. So I figured why not just do it? And I was able to use those contacts and, you know, kind of use that as a springboard for Athlete Daily. And it's just taken off ever since then.
And the website again, theathletedaily.com. You and your sister are also both certified nutrition coaches. So obviously, you guys have the background there as well. And look, I mean, it's an amazing career, you know, given the fact that you're, you know, filled with so many responsibilities from your MLB job, the fact that you have the time to do this and that you dedicated, because if anybody follows you on social media, it's like whenever there's not a game or in the mornings, you know, you're in the gym, right? You're doing CrossFit whenever you can. It's amazing. You're on the road traveling to these cities all across America, and somehow you find a kettlebell somewhere to start throwing around.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's how you meet people too. But yeah, it's something that, you know, I did my first powerlifting meet last March. And, you know, I think it goes back to childhood where I was always, again, I was doing 3 sports a day and, you know, you're always learning to juggle. And I'm sure people say this to you too, Mark. They're like, well, how do you find time to work out in this lifestyle? And you have to make time. You have to put yourself first. If I chose not to, I would just be a bad person. I would be angry. You know, I'd feel sluggish. You know, I really have to make that time. At least, you know, more often than not, when I'm on the road, when I'm traveling with the team, I have to make that time for myself. I just think it's huge.
Well, look, again, I'm happy that we've become friends over all these years. I'm certainly proud to know you and proud of all your success. And again, theathletedaily.com. You can find Britt on social media. Her last name, Giroli, G-H-I-R-O-L-I. Follow her on all the social media sites. Check out theathletedaily.com. It's always great to catch up with you. It's been way too long. We're only talking about sports, so it's great to talk a little bit more about other stuff. But certainly congratulations on all your success, and we wish you the best.
Well, thanks, Mark. Let me know if you're in Baltimore again. We'll have to get together.
Absolutely. Britt Giroli, thanks for being part of Kill the Quit, brought to you by Killcliff.
WFON
and W292EV Marietta.
A Dickey Broadcasting Station.
Live from the Wellstar Health System Studios.
1230 and 106.3 FM. The Sports X.